Hey, everybody, welcome to another episode of the Horse Geeks podcast, where we look at horses and riding from the inside out. I'm Kirsten Nelson, professional horse trainer. And with me today again is Stephanie Carter, a certified equine nutritionist, to literally talk about the inside of a horse, inside out. And today we're going to focus on optimizing digestion for our horses. So even if we don't have problems yet, and I'm assuming the way you work, Stephanie, that when we do have problems, this would be your first step, like with nutrition, is just how
Yes.
learning how to optimize the digestion. So can you take a minute and just reintroduce yourself to everybody who might be hearing you for the first time?
Sure. So my name is Stephanie Carter. I'm a certified functional nutritional therapy practitioner. I've worked as a veterinary technician for 20 years, and my certification for nutrition is actually in the realm of human functional nutrition. And I chose to go that route because I found that for most of our agricultural animals, and even small animals to some degree, the information or the science that we have right now is a solid 20 to 30 years behind the information that we have for humans. So I pull from the human functional nutrition side of things to the animals, what I know is applicable to get a little bit better results, you know, long term, promote long term health. I'm also the case manager and the functional nutritionist on staff for True North Equine Vet in Marshall, Virginia.
Phew, that's a lot. Thank you for taking that over instead of asking me to do it because I always
It
get lost. Yes.
It's
No, and today's topic is literally the inside of the horse. And I think most horse owners need a little bit more education about whether we're talking colic, ulcers, or digestive issues come up, even if we're starting with a healthy horse. How does the digestive system work optimally, which is one of my favorite words? Or what can we do to make sure the digestive system, that we're supporting the correct function of the digestive system?
Sure. So where I usually start is that we should understand that when we get to a point where we are having a digestive issue, and that can be ulcers, fecal water syndrome, repeat or recurrent colic, even things like sensitivity to bug bites, environmental factors that cause allergies, or food allergies, those are all considered GI issues. And once we get to that point, that means that there's already underlying things that are causing that. And usually the two things that cause those issues are micronutrient deficiency, so that's your vitamins and minerals, and then systemic inflammation. So those are the two major components that create disease. The best way I think to kind of ward off all of those GI type issues or really any disease is to use a species appropriate, nutrient dense, real foods diet. And so what that means is a forage first approach
For horses.
for horses.
Yeah. Yeah. So
So
species
if we
specific for horses would be what we've talked about in your just basic nutrition for horses. Hay in front of them 24/7, 365. And why is that important for a digestion?
If we think about where digestion actually starts, it starts in the horse's mouth. And when I say it starts in the horse's mouth, the amount of times or how long they're chewing increases the amount of saliva that's produced. And the saliva actually helps to buffer against some of the stomach acid, as well as sort of prep the nutrients and whatever they're eating to be more easily digestible. And then the second part that we sort of have to think about with digestion, not only does it start in the mouth, but if we're not using forage as it horses should be consuming it. So horses are meant to be eating small amounts of forage, hay, grass, forage pellets, whatever the case may be for a domesticated horse, 18 to 21 hours a day. So they're meant to have forage passing through their digestive system 18 to 21 hours out of the day. And if they don't have forage or fiber of some sort doing that, we have to remember that the digestive tract is a group of very specialized muscles, essentially. And so if we as people aren't moving the way we should be, or being active, or lifting weights, or working out, our muscles and tissues can kind of get weak, right? And then we can't do as much as we should be able to do. And it's the same thing with all of the digestive tract as a whole, stomach, intestines, all of it. If it's not constantly contracting and moving that fiber through, it kind of gets weakened. And so that's when we can sometimes see horses who have these repeat impaction colics or repeat colic in general that keep kind of happening over and over again. Is usually there's not enough fiber. In my case, fiber I equate to forage moving through to keep everything working as it should. So those are kind of the first two things to think about.
So a constant amount, basically
All
what
of
you're
my top
saying.
five ingredients.
Oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
Just to re kind of cap what you're saying is the importance of having, and it doesn't have to be high quality hay. What you're saying is they need hay that's safe for that particular horse in front of them 24/7 in order to keep the digestive tract muscles always working and toned, that's part of how horses' digestion is set up. And so
Correct.
if they're going for long periods without food, you're weakening the digestive tract muscles.
Yes. And
Interesting.
unlike humans, so humans only produce stomach acid when we smell food or when we anticipate eating. That's when we start to make stomach acid. But unlike us, horses are meant to be producing stomach acid 24 hours a day, basically, because of all that forage that they're supposed to be consuming. So if we don't give them that forage pad or that, constant forage intake, that's when we start running into situations where we have horses who are getting ulcers or have, chronic ulcers because they don't have anything for the stomach acid to work on. Because stomach acid is actually a good thing. It's your first line of one of the first lines of defense against parasites, diseases, things like that. But it also helps to break down the nutrients that you're eating further so that it can be absorbed at the next phase of the digestion, a digestive tract as a whole. So we don't want to stop the stomach acid. We don't want to alter stomach pH so much that the stomach acid can't do what it needs to do. We need to give it more of that forage, more of that fiber to have something for it to work on. So it's not just splashing against, the mucosal lining in the stomach and causing ulcers.
Got it. So yes. And then what about supplements that might enhance digestion? I know there's a gazillion digestive aid supplements out there and some very expensive. There's some very high-end probiotics, there's prebiotics, there's if you walk through the feed store, there's a whole aisle of digestive aids and all of that. And so what is really necessary? If and in Florida, where we probably pay one of the highest prices in the country for hay, What I was a little bit like, oh my God, how am I going to feed my horses hay 24/7? And first of all, the grazing counts as forage intake. So having plenty of room for grazing is part of it. But I also found that the horses hit a fill point where they don't just gobble everything you put in front of them. They might gobble up the first bit, but when you give more, it's like they slow down and they slow down. And so it's not as daunting as it sounds at first to keep hay in front of them 24/7. That's not as bad. And so that would be number one. But then what kind of supplements do we really need? Or do certain horses absolutely need certain supplements to help with the digestion?
I think the better way to maybe think about that or approach that is what things should we avoid? Because
Okay.
there's far more of those than we realize. And then it also helps us kind of narrow down what we should be feeding. So if we have a diet that's high forage, high fat, or high fiber, high fat, for me, the forage is the fiber, that's really the best diet to be feeding any horse, regardless of whether they have a metabolic issue or digestive issue, any issue. So if we're already feeding that, then we need to look more closely at the ingredients of things in the supplements that we're feeding. So my top five ingredients that can be in complete, quote unquote, complete feeds or supplements are soy, wheat, corn, molasses, and canola. And I know I harp on those five every time we talk, but they are the most inflammatory, nutrient void for the most part, ingredients that you could possibly feed your horse. So before you even pay attention to that guaranteed analysis on a feed label or on a supplement label, look at the ingredients. And if it has soy, wheat, corn, molasses, or canola, don't buy it, because it's only to create issue in the long run. And if you already are dealing with digestive issue, it's going to perpetuate those digestive issues because they're so inflammatory. So for me, most horses that are on this high forage, high fat with an appropriate vitamin mineral diet, they don't need anything else to resolve their digestive issues, unless we're dealing with something like, grade 3 or 4 ulcers, or, fecal water syndrome, or something like that. Most of the time, if we're reducing the systemic inflammation and correcting the micronutrient deficiencies and not adding in feed items that are inflammatory or are species inappropriate, then they don't necessarily need all umpteen million supplements that everybody wants to throw at them, right?
Right.
So I think in these types of situations, we need to simplify versus adding a whole bunch of stuff in, and then focus on what is the individual issue, because diets should all be very bio-individual, meaning they fit the specific needs of the horse that you're looking at. Or for me, when I'm presented with a horse, if they have fecal water syndrome, I'm not just going to throw one standard supplement at every fecal water syndrome horse or every ulcer horse. Or it's not always going to be the same, because there's always other contributing factors that add into why they have those digestive issues before. Like, do they have long term antibiotic use? Like, did they have some chronic infection that needed to be treated? So we're using antibiotics for something, and then the ulcers started after that, or the fecal water syndrome started after that. That's just an example, but in those situations, anytime there's antibiotic use, you can, if you're not supporting appropriately after the antibiotic use, then you can end up being in these situations where you have ulcers or fecal water syndrome, or chronic allergies, regardless of whether that's environmental or food.
Because
So
antibiotics are going to wipe out
it's
all the healthy gut.
tricky because each horse is such a bio individual. There isn't one supplement that I can say is the miracle for every fecal water syndrome or every ulcer horse.
And what about there's an ingredient that I think is a preservative that I kept meaning to ask you about, and I may be saying this completely wrong, but polypropylene, or it seems like it's a preservative. I've seen it in the chaff feeds where I thought that chopped hay chaff would be a really good forage for them. But one of the ingredients that I'm like, what is that? there weren't a lot of the inflammatory ingredients in it, but I'm like, in some of the gut or digestive supplements as well as the forages, there's that ingredient. Am I saying it right? Polypropylene.
I think the most common one that you see is polypropylene glycol.
That's it.
There's one brand that I think has a different propylene that they're using, but yes, it is a preservative. Probably the best way for people to look up all of the information and the studies on that one is to visit the Environmental Working Group, because the Environmental Working Group has a database of all kinds of preservatives and the degree to which they are, healthy or causing issue, mostly for humans. But if it's causing us issue, I guarantee you it's causing the animals issue too. So that's a good resource to have in your arsenal. Rule of thumb for me is if you have trouble pronouncing it or you don't recognize it as a food item, it's not something you want to be feeding.
Good rule of thumb. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, because when I start struggling to know what an ingredient is, and especially if it's, multisyllabic, and I'm like, I don't even know if I'm saying that right. So would it have as a, so what you're saying is we can go and research it on, what was it called again?
The Environmental Working Group,
The environment.
EWG.org.
EWG.org. Okay, and I'll put that in the notes for this as well. What's your personal opinion on polypropylene glycol?
I think that it is, I consider it to be a toxin, and it needs to be something that's eliminated from the diet. It's
Okay.
not something that's going to promote long-term health.
Okay. Because your opinion matters here. And so, even though I'm sure there's research and there may be a bit of back and forth with the scientists, I just would like, what would you do is a little bit the question, too. And you consider it a toxin.
I
Okay.
do. And I go for as clean any feed item that I'm looking for. I'm looking for as clean an item as I can get. So it, something that wouldn't be systemically inflammatory, that would promote health long term, that's not adding in any additional burden on the body as a whole. So all of the organs, I don't want to tax those any more than they already do, because there's so much going on environmentally that we can't control, that if we can try to control the amount of, toxins and inflammatory things they're eating, we're that much further along in preventing those environmental toxins from being able to cause as much issue.
Oh, that's a great way to look at it. And then you also mentioned like after antibiotics, where the antibiotics are going to kind of wipe out the healthy gut bacteria, that that would be the best time to add probiotics back into or add probiotics to the diet. So for how long and is there any negative effect of keeping our horse on long-term probiotics or prebiotics?
So, I think that kind of opens the conversation to the microbiome and what that is and why it matters. And microbiome and biome in general is really being used as like the new healthy blood buzzword, whether that's in human nutrition or equine nutrition. So it kind of gets lost, like biome itself or microbiome itself kind of gets lost in what it actually is. And so, very simply, the microbiome is made up of the organisms that are living inside your gut, and yes, all of us have them and all of us should have them. That's not a bad thing. But the microbiome is made up of organisms that live within the gut that make up the immune system is the biggest one as a whole. And it also means in, you know, how things are broken down and what is absorbed and what isn't. And it's really in charge of a lot more than we realize it is. And in human medicine, there is actually, in many cases, they have directly linked the microbiome and the health of the microbiome to the health of the brain and the brain's ability to function properly. So the microbiome is now kind of being dubbed the second brain, and it is a big deal.
Yeah.
Everything comes back to the gut. Everything comes back to the gut. And so when we use antibiotics, regardless of how long that is, the antibiotics are killing off both the bad that's in our body, but also the good, which means it's wiping out microbiome for the most part, or at least knocking it out significantly. So there's a dramatic reduction in both the good and the bad organisms in the microbiome. And so after you've used antibiotics, it's always important to follow up with a good probiotic. There are a lot of not so good ones out there, but a good probiotic to help reestablish the organisms within the gut. For me, I typically like to start right after antibiotics rather than introducing the organisms themselves. I like to use what are referred to as biome foods to help feed the organisms that are left and the healthy organisms that are left to help them sort of proliferate again, because each organism kind of thrives on different food items. And so we want to repopulate what's already in the horse's body first. And then if they still need more support, then I'll add in a probiotic. But anymore, I've gotten to the point where the biome foods themselves do a good enough job that I don't end up needing to add in the probiotics, except in really severe cases. And usually those really severe cases, we're doing some sort of microbiome testing first to see what's actually in there, what organisms are actually in the gut, before we start adding in the common day, you know, top three favorite organisms from the feed company, because we could inadvertently, by adding organisms that the horse doesn't necessarily need or weren't already in the gut, we can inadvertently create a proliferation of the wrong kind. Does that make sense?
Right. Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes, that does make sense.
That was a lot, but
no. So let me just recap that. So basically,
when
we're giving whether we're taking the antibiotics or having to give our horse antibiotics, which is necessary. One thing is, I see people trying to feed probiotics and antibiotics at the same time, and I go, I don't see the point. Do you? Or because you're saying you would start with either protocol after the antibiotics, or would you feed probiotics with antibiotics?
So that's tricky. It really does depend on the horse and the type of antibiotics you're using.
Okay.
But in most cases, I don't find it necessarily beneficial to do the actual probiotics while we're doing antibiotics. If anything, within the practice that I work for, when we're using antibiotics, we're using a lot of colostrum with the antibiotic used to try to mitigate any of the potential die-off. And that seems to work better than trying to keep supplementing the organisms themselves, you know, into the gut while we're wiping everything out.
Okay.
And then afterward.
Sorry, go ahead. Mm-hmm. Oh, I was going to say.
Afterward, feeding the biome. Blend. Oh, we keep interrupting each other.
No, there's a delay and you're freezing a little bit, so our connection is not super, but we're just going to keep forging forward. So let me just recap that basically you're saying whether it's with the antibiotics or after the course of antibiotics is finished, depending, you before you would add probiotics as a supplement, you're saying you can feed with regular, I'm assuming, types of food-based something that you want to feed the gut to just promote what the healthy gut bacteria would need to survive. So you're sort of, it sounds funny, but you're dropping in some food to the survivors on the island going, can you make it?
Yes. That's excellent. Yes. That's exactly what we're doing.
Here's
And then
another.
down the road, if we need more life support, then we can add the organisms in.
Great. But first, you're kind of parachuting in supplies for
Yes.
the ones that survived the antibiotics, and
Yes.
specifically providing the food that the good bacteria like to eat so that you're not accidentally proliferating the wrong bacteria. Is that correct?
Right. Yes. And that's kind of segues into the is it good to have my horse on probiotics long term? And the answer to that question is tricky, but it could be. It depends on what organisms your horse needs to replenish its microbiome or balance its microbiome. But if you're feeding the same probiotics all the time or the same organisms all the time, you will inadvertently create an abundance of those organisms that you're feeding, whether or not they're healthy or unhealthy. Anytime the microbiome is unbalanced, either too many of, the good stuff or too many of the bad stuff, you won't balance it. Your gut's still not functioning optimally. So if anything, I try to take a page out of the human probiotic sort of protocol, which is to rotate and make sure that you're getting different organisms every 3 to 4 months at least, if not more
Interesting.
frequently. So rotating your probiotic supplements.
And so, what would be before giving probiotics at all, are there specific food items that you could feed most horses, or is it very unique to each horse, or are there sort of your top favorites of feed these foods to try to re let the gut rebalance as much as it can on its own? What would those be?
Sure. So my all-time favorite, and I think the easiest because it feeds all of the healthy microbiome or organisms in the microbiome is Stable Feeds Seasons Blend. And I think they've even changed that to Seasons Biome Blend or something like that. And I will say my one little caveat for that is it does have some soy in it, but it is not your conventional soy, which is the soy that I usually am adamantly against. They use an organic soy that the way it's processed, the detrimental aspect of the soy is supposedly destroyed. At least that's what the science is saying. And the organic soy won't have the glyphosate, which is Roundup, in it like most conventional soy. So that's my little caveat on the yes, it has soy in it, but it seems to be the okay soy because it's a organic in the way it's processed. But that blend, the woman who owns the company and formulated that feed, Mary Hartman, really took into consideration what foods were important for the health of the microbiome and how she could balance those to feed for a balanced microbiome. So that's the easiest. It's not necessarily the least expensive way, but it's, I think, the best, most well-rounded way to do prebiotics to feed the organisms that are already in your horse's gut. There are a lot of the Immubiome products are mushroom-based and have some colostrum in them. I'm a big fan of those after antibiotic use. We use a ton of spine and nerve, because we're treating for a lot of tick diseases and EPM here in Virginia. And so we like the mushrooms for the spine and nerve, and the colostrum helps, you know, even during treatment, but the mushrooms in that blend help with the biome as well. They have several blends, and they're all good. So any of those are decent for foods, but.
And that's also made by Stable
really
Feeds.
The two companies.
Those are also made by Stable
Immune
Feeds.
Biome is the one that makes the.
Oh, Immune Biome is the name of the company.
Immune Biome, that
okay.
makes the mushroom blends.
Okay. Okay. And it has colostrum
and those are
in
kind of
it.
My top favorite.
Okay. And so if you really had like a horse that needed long-term recovery of the gut health, you might alternate between Stable Feeds and Immune Biome.
Yes. And I have a handful of others that I will rotate through frequently. BioStar makes a few that I like. It really depends on the horse's case history and, you know, what's going on and how they're presenting, you know, symptomatically, which one I use.
Okay. And would that be related to like the fecal water syndrome? Is that more related to sort of the biome of the gut that horses will develop? Leaky farts, I call them.
Typically, yes. Yes, typically, if we can get a horse off of a more conventional feed with all of those inflammatory ingredients we talked about and get them on more of a high forage, high fat diet with good, clean vitamin mineral, and then either add in the prebiotic foods, so the foods that feed the organisms, the healthy organisms in the gut, or potentially add in a product called OGS, which is organic gut solution. Usually that's enough to make the fecal water syndrome go away.
Okay.
Most often, just changing the diet without all those prebiotic type foods or the OGS, just changing the diet alone will dramatically reduce, if not make, the fecal water syndrome go away.
Okay. Great. And so if a horse has been, like, say, on the same probiotic for years and develops the sort of fecal water symptom, would you say off the probiotics, change the probiotics, add this kind of OGS supplement, or how would you address something like that, where the horse has been getting the same probiotic over time?
I think step one would be to stop that probiotic and just change to the high forage, high fat with a good vitamin mineral. Kind of let them ride it out, that those minimal changes, you know, simplistic changes, ride that out for a few months. Usually, so with the microbiome, when we try to make any changes to the diet, it takes 21 days before that microbiome changes over completely. So when we're feeding, whether we're feeding, you know, biome fueling foods, or we're making diet changes, if that's just, you know, a regular horse that's switching over from a conventional diet to this forage-based approach, it takes 21 days before the microbiome changes over completely. And so we won't really see a lot of results or dramatic results until at least that 21-day mark. Sometimes some horses will show us some pretty dramatic changes, but as far as the microbiome goes and how that's proliferating or how that's populating, it takes 21 days to completely change it over. So I think I would do at least a month to 2 months of just change the diet. And then again, depending on the individual horse and what their history is, and how they're presenting, then we might add in, probably we would add in the biome foods first. So like a prebiotic first. And that would usually balance everything out. We wouldn't necessarily have to go the route of a probiotic after that.
And what are the biome foods specifically?
There's a lot of them. So pretty much any item, I mean, even the soy, wheat, corn, molasses, canola could all potentially be feeding the biome. It's just feeding the wrong organisms. So when humans have cravings, there's a lot of people out there who crave salt, who crave sugar, you know, things like that. The cravings are driven by the organisms that are the majority in the gut. And so any food can potentially be a biome food. It's just whether or not you're feeding the healthy organisms or the unhealthy organisms. So, like I said, the stable feed, that biome blend is the most balanced because it has all of the foods that help support the healthy organisms. Sainfoin is the biggest component of their biome blend. That's a kind of heritage breed forage that they're
No,
just
wait.
bringing back
I
in
think we
Canada
talked
and
about
up
that on
north.
the first video.
But really, you can do a lot of research on the individual foods and which organisms they feed or what they're supposed to be helping with when you feed them. There's Equibiome is a company in the UK that does a lot. They've done a lot of research on microbiome, and they have kind of she does a really good job of posting blog articles about individual biome foods and why they're important, what they feed, and what they're good for. I think that's probably the best resource to send people to because there's so many different foods that you could be feeding, and you kind of have to know your individual horse's issues and then also what their microbiome status is right now in order to determine which ones to feed.
And
And
what's
the
that
company that I
website?
mentioned,
What
go
was
ahead.
the one
It's
you're just talking about?
Equibiome, Equibiome.
And they have a website or a blog or both?
They do.
Okay.
And Facebook. I think they're on Facebook as well.
And they're out of the United Kingdom.
And
Okay.
the other company, Stable Feed, that's here in the States, they're actually, as far as I understand, working to bring the biome testing here to the United States versus right now, the only option we have is to send it to the UK to the Equibiome people. But there's been a lot of issues with samples getting hung up in customs and a delay in results and things just because of that part. So it's been tricky and a little costly. So Stable Feed is, from my understanding, trying to bring that here. So I'm hoping that that'll be more available to us in the future, a little bit easier to get a hold of those tests.
Yeah, I can imagine the customs inspectors going, "Who's shipping horse poop?" Yes, that would be pretty funny. So, anything you like, let me kind of recap what we've talked about, that basically keeping forage in front of our horses 24/7. And I'm here to testify that they do slow down on the eating. They actually start to regulate how much they eat. They don't, even the ones that start off gobbling, they do slow down when they have food 24/7. And so the forage, the hay, the grazing, the pellets, the hay cubes, that they need to have something working the muscles of the GI tract most of the day. And I think you said up to 21 hours. And I go, well, horses only sleep for 4 hours. So that pretty much covers your day. And so, but the importance of having fiber, roughage going through the digestive tract is as much to keep that specific type of muscle toned and happy and working. So it doesn't atrophy in strength, which again could be part of colic issues. It could be problematic all the way around. And then the other thing you said was, or I think the next, I want to say more important thing is if our horse is on antibiotics for any reason, then we want to look at maybe facilitating with prebiotics once they finish up their course of antibiotics. And those would be what you're calling the biome foods, or the also called the prebiotics. Correct. Okay. And then if those, if the horse is still having issue, then looking at adding maybe probiotics. And if they're on probiotics long term, look at switching brands, because you may, there may be.
Well, yes.
Okay. And I'm just looking at it like walking into my feed room as the horse owner. What do I do? Okay. So did that recap it accurately, or did I miss something?
No, I think that was pretty accurate. Rather than just thinking about switching brands, it's more just making sure that whatever you're rotating through is different organisms. So when you read that list of what's included in that particular probiotic, make sure it's not the same three, because everybody keeps putting the same three organisms in the their supplements. So we want to make sure that we're getting the range, meaning we're not just feeding those three all the time, which I think is hard to do sometimes. And if you're feeding something, if you're feeding a probiotic and then you're feeding a vitamin and mineral, you want to make sure that that vitamin mineral doesn't also have the same probiotic in it. So you really have to read all the ingredients and make sure that you're not, you know, feeding too much of the probiotics.
Right. And the probiotics ingredients will be something like lactobacillus and those. Those kind of names.
Those.
Yes. Those. And so you want to make.
If you're not sure what each one of those do, you can Google it. Sometimes I still have to Google some of them because I can't keep them all straight. They're all very similar names.
Big fan of Googling when I have a question. Absolutely. Although sometimes you're weeding through so much bad information and sales pitches that it's like, okay, who can I talk to? Oh, which reminds me that your contact information is always in the description box at, with these videos or with these podcasts. And you've been really generous about offering for people to email questions to you if they have something specific. And you work with people around the country. You, that people do not have to haul their horse to Virginia for you to do a nutritional consult, that you'll work with people all over the place.
All over North America.
Great. And so I think working the digestive tract, and that the digestion begins in the mouth with the salivation, that that chewing is so important, and working sort of the mouth all the time, that the saliva is part of sort of gaining the nutritional value out of the food and maybe reducing stomach acid. And the stomach acid in horses will build up much faster than it will in humans, because ours isn't constantly stimulated. So it is an important thing to, I'm sure that's related to ulcers, is if they're not getting
which
something.
Which we could do a whole episode on.
I think we will.
Probably. It's probably a good next step in the conversation to focus on ulcers.
So I have a weird off-topic question. Not, I don't know if it's off-topic, but in sort of my little bit of research on the bad habit of cribbing, where it used to be thought that it was just a behavioral issue and that it was contagious from one horse to the next, we're now looking at especially barns that were doing like a sweet feed with all of your top five don't feed ingredients, which is part of digestive health also, not feeding corn and soy and wheat and molasses and canola oil. What do you think? Like the latest research has been that it's more of a digestive issue, which could mean a micronutrient imbalance or a biome imbalance? Do you have any thoughts on cribbing related to, or windsucking related to digestion? Or do you even think that's related?
Yes, I think it definitely can play a role. I think it can start as a lot of different things and end up being behavioral. So even if it was an imbalance in the microbiome or was ulcers, or, you know, there is some research that links it to selenium deficiency in some horses. Even if it starts as any one of those things, I think if it's left, you know, most people don't think of it as a symptom of a root cause, right? They don't think of cribbing. They just think of cribbing as a vice. They don't think of it necessarily as something's wrong internally and that's why they're cribbing. So I think it gets left unaddressed, or the solution is just to put a collar on, you know, a cribbing collar, and it is what it is. So I think when it's left too long, it then does become a behavioral thing. And it can be that it's a boredom thing, particularly if we're talking about our thoroughbreds that are coming off the track. A lot of times it's boredom, or they learned it from their mother, and who knows where mother learned it from. And there's that whole conversation about where did that start, but it could be boredom. It could be behavioral by the time you're seeing it, but there is information out there that links it to selenium deficiency. Ulcers can make horses chew wood, if not the wind sucking or the cribbing itself, but chewing the wood can be ulcers. It can also be microbiome imbalance, but eating dirt can be microbiome imbalance. Usually if they eat dirt, that means they're trying to make up for what they're lacking in their GI tract, you know, in that microbiome.
Yeah, no, I was going to ask you about that too, because there are horses that will eat dirt or eat horse poop. Or suck on rocks. Mm-hmm. Like I've seen them chew wood, suck on rocks, eat bark, eat other horse poop and things like that. And would that be, especially if you see your horse eating horse poop, would that be kind of a strong sign that the gut bacteria balance is off?
Yes. If they are going as far as eating another horse's poop, they are very, microbiome is very unbalanced at that point. Usually there, it's rarer, and I'm not going to say rare as in like it never happens, but rarer to see horses actually eating other horses' poop as it is for them to be eating dirt. I see a lot more horses start to eat dirt first than resort to eating other poop, voluntarily eating other poop. I think if you're getting to the point where you're seeing your horse eating another horse's manure, that's a big indication that you should call your nutritionist and be like, hey, something's going on with microbiome and eating poop or dirt. You know, dirt isn't necessarily, it can be a great way to repopulate if the dirt itself is healthy, which is another conversation that we could spend a long time on, but most of our soil is no longer as healthy as it should be. So they're still really not able to correct it themselves. They try. They have this innate wisdom that enables them to seek out the foods or the things, the organisms that they are lacking. But the problem is essentially we've made such a disaster of our soil and all of our food sources now, and eliminated a lot of the things that were good for them, that they just can't do it themselves anymore. So that's where we have to come in and supplement or feed differently to help them.
No, and I think in Florida, where sometimes there is no soil, it's all sand, that's when I've seen them eat other horses' poop. Or I have to ship in clay for my riding area, and they will nibble on the clay.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So interesting. Okay. So again, quick recap. Food in front of them solves a lot of issues. And if my horse has been on especially the same probiotic over time, it might not be a bad idea to take them off for 21 days, see how they do. And especially if you have the fecal water issue and they're on probiotics, then the diet change, what you're saying, really addresses a huge part of letting the guts restore to balance. And other than the diet changes, other than the diet changes that you've been recommending consistently since we first did the first podcast, then you're looking at, okay, this horse might need prebiotics. This horse might need some probiotics for a certain amount of time, but it shouldn't have to be an ongoing permanent supplementation for horses, because the goal is to rebalance the gut, not to keep feeding only certain bacteria.
Right.
Got it. I'm just looking at my notes to see if there's anything else I had to recap, or any words you want to say about just, this is a pretty general meeting or interview about digestive health, but I think the sooner we can start that, just like with the diet changes you've recommended, I'm seeing a lot of horses just right themselves, eliminating a lot of the expensive supplements that they've been on, giving them a chance to just be on this new diet change and the simplicity of it, and then looking at what the individual horse might need on top of that. But it isn't as much as I think what we're sold on all the time.
Yes, we do get inundated with, oh, your horse needs this and your horse needs that and this and that and this and that. And it becomes this huge like tsunami of, you know, sales pitches that are flying at us. And so we're all trying to do what's right for our horses. I'm sure we're all trying to do what's right for our horses, but I think the feed industry as a whole is not necessarily as honest as we'd like it to be, doesn't necessarily have the best interest of our horses in mind as much as they'd like us to believe. And it can be tricky to navigate what information is good and what isn't. And so I think that's my biggest reason behind why I do this, is because I may not have all the answers, and I'm sure there are a ton of people out there who would disagree with some of the things that I say, but I am speaking from a place of, I love horses and I will do whatever I have to do to make their lives the best that they can be. And if that means empowering the owners to make better decisions, I'm going to do that with the information and the education and experience that I have. And so I hope that I can at least sort of be one calming voice in that tsunami of other voices that says, it doesn't have to be so complicated. Let's go back to the basics.
And let's go back to food-based supplements, because like you're saying, there's a huge number of prebiotics. And I think I have seen the trend where more and more feed companies are increasing the price of their top tier feeds. And the big selling point is that you get all these extra prebiotics and probiotics as part of your feed package. So it sort of appeals to the, I don't want to think about it person. This must be good for my horse. And in a way, we end up paying more by not educating ourselves a little bit, because it's expensive to keep your horse on some of these prebiotics and probiotics over the long term. And you're saying it's not necessarily even the
expensive
healthiest
in the
thing.
Vet bills department too.
Yes. Yes. And that's what I tell people all the time. I go, look, you can put a little bit of money into your education or a whole lot of money into your vet bills. I go, and I agree with you. Sometimes the simplest thing is the best thing. That it
and
doesn't.
There's a lot we can do with the diet to prevent a lot of issues that would be very costly, you know, both emotionally and monetarily with vet bills or, you know, whatever the case may be. But for a lot of times it's vet bills, but a lot of what we do with diet can prevent you from ever even having to go down that road.
Yes. Letting the body balance itself with the right kind of support is a far more powerful way of taking care of our horse's nutrition than trying to stick 8,000 supplements and medications over the top of inflammatory foods. I know, but that's what we've
Right,
been
because it
doing.
won't ever get any better. If you just keep adding medications and more supplements, and it's not going to get better because we're not addressing the root cause. We're not trying to find what is actually the reason for this manifestation of the symptom or symptoms, because a lot of times it's not just one thing, it's a lot of things, and they all kind of point in the same direction. And if you're not familiar with taking that kind of approach, and most owners don't necessarily have that background to do that, and most of our vets are very take a very conventional approach to treatment, which is, band-aid, suppress the symptom, but not necessarily dig for the root cause of that symptom. And so if you're not taking that a look at it that way, you won't ever stop the cycle. You'll just suppress the symptom, but it'll come out as some other symptom some way eventually. So it's really important to try to take st a step back and look at what is actually the cause of that symptom or
That's a
disease.
great way to think about it. No, it's the same when I work with behavioral issues or performance issues. There is always a root cause. You keep tracing it back. I go, so, okay, we have to put on our detective hats and sleuth it out. But there is always something there to be found. And what you've brought to the podcast is just fantastic, Stephanie, because I think
I
nutrition
appreciate
is
that.
such a big mystery for most horse owners. And I'll talk to horse owners all the time, and they go, oh, yeah, I spoke to the nutritionist at X, Y, or Z feed company. And I go, no, that's not a, that they may have a degree in nutrition, but they're working for the feed company. So what they
They're
know,
only going to tell you what they're representing.
what their products are. Yes. And it's not that they, don't try to do the research or aren't experts, but it's there's always a bit of an agenda behind the advice. And so I go, it's better sometimes to just take a step back and go, what do our horses really need? And you've really brought that to these podcasts because it's hard to find an equine nutritionist. There's not a lot of you guys floating around every horse town.
And to be honest, I can think of only one other nutritionist, or I'm a functional nutritionist, but a true nutritionist who even thinks the same way I do. There's only one, and she's not, as far as I know, really not taking on new clients. She's sending them to me. So we're like on this island. You and Deb talk about being on the island of misfit toys.
Yes,
Why are
yes.
Dr. Getty and I are about on the island of misfit
Yes.
nutritionists.
But the proof is in the pudding. And even since our first podcast, some of the people I know contacted you and got consultations, lived nowhere near you. And I've been seeing pictures of the horses changing. I've been getting reports because they're also clients of mine. And so it's just been fascinating to watch sometimes the rapid, obvious changes and sometimes the more subtle changes, but every horse really responding to what you're recommending. And I go, at the end of the day, the horse's body tells us the truth. And I live by that
Absolutely.
axiom in training. I go, the body doesn't lie to us. And so a couple of people were skeptical. I go, what's it going to hurt? Try it, see what happens. You're not starving your horse and you're not malnourishing your horse to do what you're recommending. I go, they might be fussy about it, but it's just an amazing thing I recommend for people to try as well, because I go, I've already seen, just since our first podcast together, several horses that I've known a long time make really significant changes in a pretty short period of time. It's been pretty phenomenal.
Yeah, that mare that's close-ish to you there in Florida, that I think she was the first one of your clients that I worked with, and it that mare, particular mare, had a lot going on, like for a very, very long time. And when I got the first, I call them progress reports, and it had only been 2 weeks, and already she was shiny, she was fatter, she looked quieter, her top line was relaxed. Even I was kind of amazed at that rapid a turnaround for that horse, because I thought we probably, and I think I sort of forewarned the owner that we may not see significant results for a couple months, if not longer, because this has been such a chronic thing. But, and all we did for her was, just take it back to the basics. And it was astonishing how quickly, despite all of her chronic issues, she really started to turn around.
No, and that owner actually, I'll just share this quick story. I know we're running a little long, but that owner has been a longtime client. I've known that horse a long time. It was an off-the-track thoroughbred from a rescue. And she's a tricky horse all the way around, no matter how you slice it or dice it. But the day you and I recorded the first podcast on basic equine nutrition, she had texted me later, like a couple hours after we did the recording, and sent me pictures that the farrier, when he trimmed her hooves, her white line was bright red. And she's like, "Hey, the farrier's recommending this. What do you think? What should I do?" And I go, "It just so happens that I just met with this nutritionist, and I gave her like the most rudimentary advice. I said, just because she was on senior, she's on all these supplements." I said, and the barn already was feeding Timothy pellets and already had the Cool Stance fat supplement. And I said, even if you don't give her vitamins and minerals right away, I said, just take her off of everything and just feed her the Timothy pellets and the Cool Stance and start with that. And then she got a hold of you, watched the podcast, got a hold of you, worked with you, and it's just been steady progress since. And at exactly, I think she gets her horse trimmed every 4 weeks. And this horse has had shoes and pads on the front feet because she's been so easy to inflame. And the hoof trimmings were absolutely back to normal in 4 weeks. The ridges from inflammation on the hoof, those sort of bands that horses get, had gone away. And the farrier, and this is 4 weeks of not even a perfect diet change, just getting off the inflammatory feed and giving her more hay. And the farrier even said, this is such amazing change in her feet that if she does this well the next shoeing cycle, let's look at taking the pads off. Like it was, and I find that astonishing because people are struggling with hoof issues and in inflammation of the white line and laminitis. Like, that kind of thing can be super expensive, super intense, and drawn out for months. And I go, done and done, like 4 weeks, the feet are back on track. I just found that stunning. And that was just me relaying what I learned from you and her going cold turkey that night, like cold turkey, no more senior. And so it's been fascinating to watch you tweak the diet and see even more progress with that horse that has been really challenging. Like, I knew there was some underlying root cause that this horse was so stuck in her training.
And we're about to tweak it again some more this afternoon.
Excellent. Excellent. So I will let you go because I know that's who you have to meet with next. And thank you. And we'll look at maybe doing a podcast just on
Of
ulcers. I know
course.
that's a big one. But thanks everybody for joining us.
Yes.
Thank you so much again, Stephanie. I think you are helping millions of horse owners and millions of horses with just this sound, simple advice that I'm seeing work with lots of horses I know very quickly. So thank you for that. That is huge.
That is my biggest hope, is that we are making a difference for horses everywhere.
Excellent. All right, you guys, we'll see you next time on the Horse Geeks podcast. Thanks very much.